Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Author's Corner. You can check me out on Twitter, at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, neilhaley.com, and all the different places. And I'm really excited about our topic today, and I'm excited the authors I have on. And it's an absolute honor to welcome the program, the authors of Volume 1, The Outsiders of the American Immigrant. And I'm excited to welcome the program. And on the show right now, we have on the show Dr. Mark Russell and former Congressman Gephardt. Thanks for calling, and I appreciate you guys coming on the show.
It's great to be with you. It's great to be with you. This is Dick.
Yeah. Hey. Hi, Dick. How are you? So we're going to go right into the first. We're going to go to the questions first. We're going to point the first question to Dr. Mark Russell. Why did you guys write the book? And both of you guys can answer that question. Dr. Mark, first you.
Well, we wrote it basically because we really believe there is a need for Americans to hear the stories of immigrants, to understand their experiences, and to, you know, live through their experiences to a greater understanding of the contributions that immigrants have made and continue to make to America.
Yeah, absolutely. And it definitely, we need to go into that situation. And Congressman Gephardt, was the same thing for you, the thing you were thinking about as well?
Yeah, you know, I've always known that we're an immigrant nation. That unless you're a Native American, you came from somewhere else, or your ancestors did. And over time, I've come to understand that that probably is the secret sauce of America, that we have all of this diversity. We have people from all kinds of backgrounds and ethnic origins, all kinds of experiences, and that that's really a value to America. And the two themes that I found run through all these stories, one is because most of the folks have come from places that are really without opportunity, they have a deep understanding of the opportunity that's presented by being an American, and they're grateful for it. They're very grateful, and they will not fail. They will apply all the discretionary effort that you need to not fail in our country. So those are two really good things. I will not fail, and I'm grateful for my opportunity. That's something that we all need to understand.
Absolutely. And I agree with both of your points about why writing the book, because this is the land of opportunity. You can go from having nothing to something so special with hard work, putting your mind to things and never giving up the American dream. And I think that's important. And so why, Dr. Mark, did you choose the book title, The Outsiders? And I'll go both questions for both of you guys.
Yeah, well, so, you know, we have this as a unique project in that we're releasing six volumes and six series. And this is the first one, first volume of the series. And we went with The Outsiders because we're looking at essentially four different types of immigrants. So there's many different types of immigrants, but we're looking at the types of immigrants that have tended to be a little bit more marginalized, or at least had some sort of slightly negative view toward them. And those are refugees, the poor, Muslims, and illegal immigrants. Mm-hmm. So those four we kind of felt were marginalized immigrants and sort of categorized as outsiders. So we kind of started with them and explored their stories and are bringing those to the surface. So that's where we got the term outsiders from.
Interesting. And especially when we hear that term, Congressman Gephardt, in a poor manner by some people, especially establishment people, in ways, this is a different type of outsider. So the title kind of catches you, but yet it's something that is really what's pushing our politics today.
No, that's absolutely right. And we also have a deep understanding I certainly do from my time in Congress, of the upset and the frustration and the fear that the immigration movement, if that's what you want to call it, has for people that are already here. And we have deep empathy for, people's worries. People have lost jobs. We had a bad recession. And there's always of the other or the outsider. That's been our history with immigration. That's always what happens. But we're trying through these stories to really illustrate that while it's normal and understandable that people should fear this and be worried about it, that these folks have really been a valuable part of our society. They've helped make the pie grow bigger for all Americans, and so that we can have greater economic success, not less. So
yes,
that's really why we wanted to emphasize the outsiders, the people that are the most feared and the most maybe misunderstood.
Absolutely. And I think, and this is what I was very captured by this, Dr. Mark, because I was considering, are we going to have a book that's going to really attack immigration? Okay. And I was like, oh no, this is a little bit, I'm a conservative. And when I started seeing this stuff, I said, oh no, I don't want to end up having something that would be in a bad light because of what we've been saying about immigration. But after reading up on what we're going to talk about in a little bit, about the areas that the categories you're going to cover in this first volume, I was very happy. So how can you define immigrant? Can you define immigrant for me?
Yeah, so an immigrant is essentially a person, migrant or migrate comes from moving, M comes from moving in. So an immigrant is someone who's moving in, so someone who's moving into our country. And part of the reason we want to clarify the term immigrant, of course, is there are distinct types of immigrants and there's distinct reasons why people move in. So refugees come from the word refuge, people seeking a place of refuge. Typically, they are fleeing against their own will, more or less. But other immigrants are coming because they see opportunity here. But we think across the board, what we have seen consistently, and which we're trying to portray in these stories, are that people see the opportunity. They're very grateful for the opportunity. They'll work exceptionally hard, as Dick mentioned, to not fail. They just will not fail. And four, they really see the opportunity as something for their children. And that is first and foremost, even if they come initially without their children. So that's what an immigrant is. And we think by and large, that's why immigrants come to America, and that's why they're valuable to America.
And Congressman Gephardt, anything else that he left out in definition of immigrant for yourself?
No, I think that pretty well defines it. and again, by telling stories, I think for a lot of Americans that we're telling the stories to, they can be reminded that they probably came from an immigrant ancestor who came here at an earlier time. That doesn't necessarily make people feel better about the whole thing. But I think most people realize that, once you've climbed the ladder to success, you really shouldn't pull up the ladder for others to be able to get on the ladder. And so I think the stories are an important way to get a lot of those obvious facts across. And what I found in my whole career is that the best way to communicate is through stories. If I give you policy statements, nobody knows what I'm talking about. But if I tell a story, then it's concrete. People can get it and understand it.
Absolutely, in the stories. And then we go into the four categories where, again, for our listeners out there and our TV viewers, these four categories are categories that have been defined in this presidential election in poor terms at times. So I am glad that they are covered, the refugee, the poor, the Muslim, and the illegal immigrant. And how? And so the question for Dr. Mark is, how are all these groups the same but also different in defining an immigrant?
Well, that's great, great question. I think that they're, in the way that they are the same is something that I alluded to earlier, is that they are groups that have been sometimes unfairly categorized, unfairly generalized against, and there's a somewhat negative connotation associated with them. You know, so for example, with the poor, you know, one of the sort of underlying expectations or fears or concerns with the poor is that they come here, they're willing to work for way less money, they're kind of taking jobs, and they're you know, also potentially prone to theft, and because of their poverty and their unfortunate economic situation. But we want to show that in these stories that those negative connotations are actually the exception to the rule. Statistically, we see over and over again that they're not more prone to theft, that their actual contribution to the economy creates jobs rather than takes them away. But we think, you know, statistics and data don't tell as much as the genuine stories of people who come here. And once you have personal relationships with them, you see that that becomes clearer and more true. And we could take that same principle, apply them to the other groups here in a sense of Muslims. You know, they are a very broad, very diverse group from people all over the world.
Yes.
They're not the same. They don't think the same. They are very different. And when we have unfortunate stereotypes based upon the most extreme versions of them, we want to combat that and say, no, that's not fair. 99.9% of these people are amazing, awesome people who contribute well to our society. And so that's why we chose those four categories, and that's where we think they all have similarities in the sense that they actually are positive contributors,
absolutely,
even though they have very unique differences.
They definitely do. And Congressman, you're seeing firsthand some of the definitions, and I'm glad they're all highlighted. That's why I really recommend people pick up the first volume, is that somehow in this presidential campaign, not the fault of the candidates, but just how it just ends up being out in the media, that some of these categories, the four that we are you cover in this book, are really poorly represented. They're like treated awfully in some sort of way based on media bias and spin. So I'm sure you're happy as well to show success in all four areas, right?
That's right. What you find in any political campaign, and we see it in this campaign, and it happens a lot just in life, is that we use what I call allness statements because it's more convenient. You know, reality is complicated. And so rather than saying it's complicated and going into the complication that's represented by stories of actual people, we just say all Muslims are whatever, or all, you know, people from Scotland are whatever. And
yes,
that's just inaccurate. So what we're trying to do is just disaggregate those allness statements, and you can only do that by telling stories.
Definitely, telling stories, and that's what you're really into. So how did you choose the people to highlight in your book, Dr. Mark?
Well, we had a couple of criteria we were looking for. One is we really want to show the diversity of immigrants because, you know, sort of this is very similar to what Dick was just alluding to with the allness statements and with the political campaign, is sometimes you get statements of immigrants and people have a sort of a narrow view in their head of what that means. And we have an amazing range of immigrants in this book that come from all over the world, all different religions, and of men and women who contribute highly. So we're looking significantly for diversity. We're also looking not only for diversity in terms of their origin and their gender and religion, but also in the way they have contributed to society. Because, it's not all about people who come here and are, say, like an Elon Musk who came from South Africa and, you know, has Tesla, super successful multi-billionaire. But the people who do the, you know, blue-collar work, who are the salt of the earth, the people who contribute to the daily lives in ways that are sometimes unnoticed. And we want to highlight those type of people as well to say, look, let's not forget to look at the people who are actually doing some of the jobs that that we benefit on a daily basis without recognizing it. So that we basically went in with those sort of those criteria of diversity of origin, job, contribution, and religion. And we came up with this group, and I can tell you there are hundreds and hundreds of more people whose stories need to be told, but that's how we got to the people in this original version.
And Congressman, were you in that process of finding the people to cover, were you really looking at that American dream, weren't you, Congressman, when choosing people to highlight?
Absolutely. Again, I'll start back to where I said a moment ago, these folks will not fail. And kind of the original story that I obtained that really got me interested in doing this book, I think is a great example. So my son and I were in New York waiting to get a cab, and it was busy time and we couldn't get one. And this fella came up to us and he said, I think I know who you are. Looks like you need a ride. And I said, yeah. He said, I got a black car. I'll take you. So we jump in the car and we're driving along. And I said, where are you from? And he said, Bangladesh. I said, how long you been here? He said, 12 years. I said, do you own this car? He said, yeah, I've got 15 of them. And I said, how did you do that? He said, well, when I got here, I drove a cab for 3 years, 20 hours a day, 7 days a week. I saved all the money I could. And now I have 15 black cars and I have a nice little small business. I said, terrific. And I said, do you have kids? He said, yeah, I got 3 kids. I said, where are they? He said, 2 are in law school and 1's in medical school. I said, what do you think about America? He pulled the car over to the curb, turned around to me, put his hands together, and he said, thank God for America. I could not have thought of doing this in Bangladesh. So that, to me, is the kind of the typical story that we've looked for,
yes,
where people come here with nothing. They realize the American dream. They make it happen through personal effort and perseverance. And he's expanding our economy. It's synergistic. It is not subtracting value from the economy. It's adding value.
The political motive that we need to look and bring out in politics is the ability to be successful. The ability to hard work pays off. And I wish that we could have that being talked about during this presidential election, during any of the campaigns. Hard work leads to success. You're going to have to sacrifice. You're going to have to give up. You're going to have to get out of your comfort zone in so many ways. And for these people, they did that. They did that, and they became part of the United States. And that's the most important thing. And Dr. Mark, that's what you want to say is, hey, you know what? This is what we want. We want people to have that belief system that hard work pays off, and we don't need other people to take care of us. We can do it ourselves as long as we have the opportunity. And that's what I think this book's really trying to tell.
Absolutely, 100%. I really like your emphasis there on the hard work, because that is something that I think that we can look to a lot of our fellow citizens who are immigrants who have come here. And that's very much exemplified in the stories in this book. One story is a guy by the name of Nabil Farid, who came from Palestine. You know, he came over, he worked as a bus driver. He did everything he could, worked really hard, difficult. He's got 3 kids, a doctor, a lawyer, successful entrepreneur. And you see the direct lineage and the correlation to the hard work that the immigrants put in and then the fruits of their labor. And I do believe for those of us who are maybe multi, you know, my family is 6th generation American, Scottish, Irish roots. And so it's a good reminder for those of us to look back and go, man, it is hard work that we need to put forth. And we learn that from the immigrants who keep coming and keep demonstrating and showing to us. So this is an opportunity to learn from them. Keep the system going.
Absolutely. Okay, so Congressman, where can we find information on you, like social media-wise, different things, and connect with you and any of the upcoming things that you have coming up before the election?
Well, I can be reached on email. I have a Facebook page where we are promoting the book and everything to do with the book. So that's what people ought to do. It's great to talk to people, and I hope people will go to Amazon and pick up this single and start reading the stories. That's my hope in this whole thing.
And Dr. Mark, same thing for you. Your background, and for people to understand, as the co-author, but also your background as an entrepreneur and information we can find on you.
Yeah, so for Congressman Gephardt, you can just search at Dick Gephardt. You'll find him on Twitter, Facebook. For me, you can search at Mark L. Russell. Those are our two handles. Go to theamericanimmigrant.us. That's our website. And you can just go to Amazon and search American Immigrant to find the book there. So likewise, look forward to interacting. And we've set up the whole Facebook and the website for interaction and would love to hear people's thoughts and views.
All right. Well, guys, thanks for calling. Best of luck and tremendous story. This is a bunch of stories to give people hope and stop the negativity. And you guys writing this book is going to hopefully stop that negativity going on about the immigrant and about opportunity. So thanks again for calling, guys.
Absolutely.
Thanks
for having us, Neil.
Take care. Okay. Bye-bye. You're listening to Author's Corner, and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter, at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, and neilhaley.com. And we are live at the Microsoft Store at Dadeland Mall in Miami with Miami Dolphins quarterback Ryan Tannehill. Ryan, thanks for calling, and how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, Ryan. Kind of a couple questions for our listeners that are very, very interesting. One is, did you always have dreams of being an NFL player?
I did. I always loved the game of football. I grew up around it. My dad was a coach, and it was always a goal of mine. Obviously, I knew it was a long shot growing up, so, you know, I had other plans as well, but, you know, definitely was going to do everything I could to make it to this level, and, you know, fortunately enough, I was able to make it.
Wow, and it's a process, isn't it, for sure, in those dreams, and there was lots of ups and downs, weren't there?
Oh, of course. You know, it's never a smooth road. You know, you're going to face a lot of adversity no matter what you do in life, and it's all about how you respond to it. So you have to be able to fight through that and just keep pressing forward, keep setting your goals high, doing everything you can to achieve them, and usually good things will happen to you.
What advice would you give young people about making it to the NFL?
I would just say, you know, work hard and enjoy playing sports, you know, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, whatever interest you have, just enjoy it. You know, I think it's, like I said, a slim chance for anyone to make it to the NFL. So I think you just have to understand that going in, but set your goals high. And like I said, do everything you can to achieve them.
You've been placed in a pretty difficult position, replacing your teammate. Have you been practicing for the Xbox Challenge to be ready for this challenge today?
No, I'm excited to be a part of the Xbox NFL Player Charity Challenge. But no, I haven't been practicing, unfortunately. I'm not a big gamer. I don't play a whole lot. So I'm really going to have to, you know, pull something out here to have a shot.
Any time in your life were you a gamer? Like when you're younger and stuff at all?
I played a little bit growing up, but and in college a little bit. But, you know, I was never a diehard, so you know, I'm no pro by any stretch.
And so how does it feel to play a digital game for Ndamukong Suh's charity? Is that pretty interesting, to be able to play for him?
Yeah, it's exciting. You know, I'm just excited to be a part of this process, this challenge, and, you know, it's for a good cause. So, Excited to be a part of it, and hopefully, you know, I can come out with a win.
Hey, you have the fans here. What I found, I saw the pictures from last week's challenge with Doug Baldwin, and the Seattle fans were just going wild at the Microsoft store. So you're going to have your fans there ready to go. So I'm sure you're excited that your fans will be watching tonight at the Microsoft store and also live on Twitch.
Yeah, it's really exciting. When I walked up to the store, there's I don't know how many, but a good line of fans out front, and everyone seemed excited and you know, ready to watch the game. So it should be fun.
Well, last week Doug won, so let's hope this week you win, and then I guess they'll all want to interview with me to win it for the charity. So that's fantastic for sure. And Ryan, where can we find information on you? Follow you, learn more about you. Where can we go?
I'm on Twitter. I think my handle is RyanTannehill1, and I'm on Instagram, and I don't know my handle, so you're probably not going to learn a lot about me actually on either one of those, because I don't even know my handle. But you can look at
Ryan,
the Dolphins website.
Yeah.
Oh, my Instagram handle, just found it, is RTannehill17.
All right, and Ryan, is it because of the game planning every week, how much you have to game plan, and it's difficult to even spend this time on a Thursday because Tuesday's your off day, so you're constantly preparing for your next game, aren't you?
Yeah, fortunately we're on the bye this week, so we don't have a game this week, but yeah, usually, you know, I'd be still at work, you know, working away, watching tape and getting ready for the upcoming game. So enjoying the bye this week, and we'll get back to work next week.
And you killed my Steelers, I tell you, so it looks like you guys are on a getting better, and see what happens this season. And good luck, and hopefully the Steelers will see you in the playoffs. So I'm rooting for you for sure.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks, Ryan. Take care. Okay, bye-bye.
You too.
You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter, at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, and also on Periscope, at Total Tutor, NeilHaley.com. And I'm excited to welcome the program, and I tell you, if he's able to do this for certain people, personal trainer Dwayne Riggins. Dwayne, how are you, and thanks for calling.
How you doing? That was going great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. And your success as a personal trainer, how can you say, hey, you know what? I really can do it, and I'm able to really show that I really know what I'm doing, and I have results that can show it. Because there are tons of personal trainers out there, am I correct? All over, everywhere.
It's a lot of personal trainers out there. It seemed like it's the thing to do. Everybody want to become a personal trainer, but unless you have a personality to do it, you know, to actually help people get results, see results. I mean, it's, you know, one thing about me, my heart is in it, you know, and I'm very passionate about what I do. So I get results because of my passion. And a lot of people just do it because they feel like it's a good occupation. But I do it because I love it. I love changing people's lives.
And that's so true. And when did you discover that? Tell me when you discovered that.
Oh, man. I started training. I've been training for over 20-some years. And so I discovered it a long time ago. I always had a way. I always liked people. Now, from training children, high school, college, professional, I always had this thing about motivating people to be their best. So I may have discovered it for a long time ago. I just never accepted it until maybe like 2 years ago. But I always had this thing where I enjoy, you know, helping people. If I can help you change your life to become a new person, to become a better version of yourself, you know, that's worth more money than anything to me. It's worth a lot.
Well, absolutely. And when you discovered that, you said you wanted to get better and better at that. And how did you kind of create research, find out research, know what really does well for you, and teach others? How did you figure all that out?
I started researching. You know, we got the technology now. We can Google, and YouTube. You watch and see what people are doing. There's sometimes, you know, in the morning, early in the morning, I get up early in the morning, you see all these little exercise programs going on TV. And because I worked in so many different gyms, I pretty much want to know what people want to do. And now we in this exercise phase of our lives now where people are really, really, really focusing on trying to live longer, trying to eat right. You know, and so I research. I'm in gyms. I see people. I have large classes from 70 to 150 people at a time. And so you kind of get a feel for what people want. You know what I'm saying? And when you watch people and people come to you and say, hey, don't worry, I need to do this. I need to do this. I need to change that. You know, you kind of like know where you need to be at. You know, it's weird, but you have to have a passion. I go back to that. You have to have a passion for it. If you have a passion for it, you'll do your homework. You know what I'm saying? You'll find out what you need to do to help people change their life.
And that's so true. Once you have that passion, you want to become better. You want to do better. And were you exactly. First, did you practice on yourself in a way and say, okay, give us your athletic background and health background before even training lots of people?
I trained in martial arts for a long time. I have a master in Aikido in Taekwondo, and I've studied Aikido-Jitsu. I did a little boxing. I trained. I competed in martial arts and full contact karate before MMA became MMA. It was called full contact, so I competed a few times. And so I figured, you know, when Taibo was coming out, you know, my partner at that time said, hey, why don't we do something like Taibo? And I said, well, that's don't call it Taibo. It's called kickboxing. And we started teaching a very small class of like 10 to 15 people. And it just grew from there. And then I started working at Gold's Gym. And you know, when I got my certifications and everything, so working at Gold's Gym, from Gold's Gym to Lifetime Athletics. And now I'm running a boxing program at Pole Yoga in Short Hills, Far Hills, New Jersey. And from there, I started working with NFL players, from NFL players to college to high school players. And it just continued to grow. You know, I mean, it's, once again, it's that passion. And people, when they see that passion, they gravitate to you.
So what made you want to start to work with NFL, high school athletes, college athletes? What kind of reasoning, you know, doing the average everyday person, but saying, I want to train these high-performance athletes?
What happened with me was I was training at this place, this one athletic facility, and someone came up to me and told me, Bart Scott, I want to, you know, do some boxing with you. And I kind of blew it off because, you know, I wasn't sure how serious he was about it. And he approached me and said, hey, man, I want to do some boxing, some workout, you know, workout with you. And I said, okay, fine. You know, so I took his number down, and when I took his number, he changed his number. And so I figured, he, you know, was like, all right, fine, you don't want to do this. So anyway, finally he called me back and, you know, told me he changed his number, and I started training Burke Scott. Started working with him, and it just, the ball started rolling. So he started bringing a lot of his teammates in with him. And from there, you know, started training high school players, which I worked with Rashawn Gary, who plays for Michigan now, who is ranked number one in the nation overall.
Wow.
High school football. But yeah, he was the number one recruit. He played for Michigan right now. He's a freshman. In fact, it just sounded like he's a top 10 freshman in college.
Wow.
I found that out a few days ago. And it just continued to go. And from that point on, I get phone calls from parents for some of the children that play soccer, football, lacrosse, swimming, you name it. And they come to me, and we work with them. So it just started rolling. You know, I'm passionate, and I love what I do.
And
people can see that.
And Dwayne, what you did is basically once you showed, hey, look what I can do for a professional athlete, especially the caliber of a Bart Scott, you're like, holy cow. And Dwayne, I know you have an exciting somebody's on the line now, and I know that he is one of your greatest advocates and fans of what you do. So tell us who we have on the line.
Well, you have Bart Scott on the line. Bart Scott not only was a client of mine, and we still work out together, but now he became a very good friend, and he's like my little big brother. Because even though he's younger than me, I still ask him for advice. But we have Bart Scott online, which is a very good friend of mine. So I've trained for, I think, the last 4 years of his career. And we've been pretty cool for the last, maybe six, 7 years now. So I have Bart Scott.
Hey, Bart, how are you?
Yeah, I'm here, man. I was waiting for y'all to tag me in, man. It was like I was playing double dirt. I was waiting for my opportunity. I was able to listen to Dwayne, describe himself, but from the outside looking in, what really made me gravitate and stay with Dwayne, because I was coming from the Baltimore Ravens.
Right.
And boxing had always been a part of my training regimen. And I was looking for somebody new because I'm in a new market. And his name came, referred Dwayne to me. And it was funny because he did blow me off because he was talking to somebody else. And he was just kind of looking like, hey, man, I'll get back to him. Like, I'm serious. Like, I'm looking for somebody to box. And get cardio because, we're in the world of cross training. To answer your other, questions and statements that was made before while I was listening, why athletes want to do this type of training, because, we have coaches specifically for our sport.
Right.
But cross training is a opportunity to train muscle groups that you may not train all the time. And it's to make yourself uncomfortable. And Dwayne is the master in making you uncomfortable. And being able to, it's his passion, and you want energy, because at the end of the day, you're getting up, and for the most part, you're doing something that you really don't want to do. It's something that you need to do to try and go to the next level and get over the top. If you want to be like everybody else, you do what everybody else does. And if you want to be better, then you do more. When they rest, you work. And Dwayne does that. And listen, it's not convenient to be a trainer. Everybody wants to be a trainer. Every, former athlete that used to play a sport, because they know about working out, they try and leverage that experience to be a trainer. But, being a trainer is also being a motivator. It's also being a psychologist.
Yep.
It's also, being a therapist. A lot that comes along with it. Athletes coming back from injuries, athletes being doubted. You have to have somebody that's able to push your buttons without getting on your nerves. And, Dwayne was able to do that. And, the rest of my teammates saw the change in me, saw the improvements in my conditioning, my body, and they wanted a piece of it. Athletes were always looking for a secret weapon. And for a lot of New York Jets, a lot of, Washington Redskins, a lot of, other places, people that were training with us, he was the secret weapon. He was the thing that was different. Because at the end of the day, we all do the same stuff at football practice.
Right.
We all go through the back, right. We all do the drills, but doing something different. I can remember him changing one of my teammates' body, and the coaches coming to me and saying, listen, I don't care what you guys are doing, just keep doing it. He doesn't have to come to this off-season program, because obviously you're doing something, and we see the difference. He's running around. He feels good. He's chasing people down the field. He's able to go longer on drive, sustain his stamina. And that's what it was all about. So that's why, I continue to work with Dwayne even to today. And Dwayne's just getting started. much like George Foreman, when George Foreman made the comeback, he inspired a lot of people that was, people thought maybe were in the twilight of their career. But Dwayne is still an infant, I think, and just scratching the surface of his potential and his reach. And I just wanted to, once I retired, to try and, link forces so I can try and shine a light brighter on him and tell people and explain to people that this guy is different. I've worked with some of the best trainers,
right,
or people who people thought were the best trainers all over the world. The best trainers that money can buy. The best training facilities that people perceive that money can buy. But to me, he's the best. Or I wouldn't align my brand with him, because I only associate with the best. I only want to be around the best because the best motivate each other.
And that's so true, Bart. And what would you say how on the field, the fourth quarter, because he works you so hard, you're able to keep going, right? You're able to keep staying passionate.
Let me tell you something. Yeah, first of all, the way I play, I try to play my head on fire, but you got to be in a hell of a shape to talk crap for four quarters and play at the same time. You know how hard it is to talk? Because when you're talking, you're not breathing.
Right.
But I was known for talking, and the reason I was able to talk is because Dwayne pushed me in the off season so that when I got to the game, it was child's play to me. I had, I could run a marathon after the game. It was, because I pushed myself, and we always say, it's better to die here than die on the field. Kill yourself, can't nobody else kill you. So there's nothing that a coach could do for me or do to me that I hadn't already done to myself. So you'll get tired of watching me before I get tired of doing it.
And Dwayne, how
do Neil, I used to call him muscle fatigue.
Okay.
And what I would do is wear them out. You know, I would just keep them moving. I would never let up. In regards to who it was with Bart or whether it was Kendrick Ellis or at one time Tim Tebow came in, it didn't matter. You know, I mean, I would just keep them moving. And they would look at me sometimes, man, and say, man, you lost your mind. But I knew, you know, it wasn't about four quarters. To me, it was like a fifth quarter.
Right.
You know, even though there's not a fifth quarter technically, but I want them to be ready. So if there was a fifth quarter, they can go through the fifth quarter. Like Bart said, Bart would talk through the whole thing. And I even watch the games and watch how they will perform. And I'm looking at them where everybody's got their hands on the, you know, on the hips. And I'm watching Mark walking around, selling noise. I'm watching Kendrick. I'm watching these guys, and I know they've been with me and they spent the summer with me, along with other training. So that to me was amazing, you know.
And
that's the validation that what we were doing, right?
Yeah, and Bart, did you have goals that you wanted to set when you sat down with Dwayne and said, I want to accomplish these things, especially being with the Jets now and at the final years of your career? Did you have, like, certain goals you wanted to meet? Yeah.
You know the hardest thing when you're an athlete is finding somebody that has enough balls to push you.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, you're paying them, so they want to tell you what you want to hear, not what you need to hear. And you know, you have to have a trainer that's going to make you uncomfortable, that's going to push you past your limits. You know, you can't have a fan, you can't have a friend. You need somebody that's going to motivate you, that's going to push you to be the best version of yourself. You know, so the goals were simple. I want to be the best version of me that there's ever been. And then next year we're trying to beat that person. Because it's supposed to go the opposite direction. As you continue to age, you're supposed to get worse. You know, but you look at exceptions to the rule, like Bernard Hopkins, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, like Tom Brady, guys that's able to defy the laws of time. But you do that because you live a disciplined life and that you're willing to push yourself and never be, you know, complacent. But to do that, you need a trainer that's willing to go there on that journey with you. Need somebody. Listen, it's not convenient dealing with athletes, man.
Right.
We got weird schedules. We got high demand. You know,
exactly.
It's not glorious being a trainer. I mean, you're getting up at, you know, it's no time limit. It's no clock in and clock out. You know, you may get up at 4 o'clock and don't get home to 9 o'clock for a month.
Exactly.
In the summer times, I train on Sunday. There's no days off.
No.
And if he's not training me, he's training somebody else. There's no days off. I might get a day off, but he doesn't get a day off.
I train seven days a week.
Need somebody that's willing to do that.
And that's so important. And Bart, one other thing is that you look at, you know, after when you retired, why did you want to keep your body in such great physical shape still? You see certain athletes, they stop after they retire, but you need this to keep going with the kind of schedule you have with CBS, right? And you're constantly traveling.
Well, first of all, I don't want to look fat on film. I already got 10 pounds added on the camera. I'm trying to make sure I still got my sexy on. You know, secondly, you don't want to be that guy. You don't want to be that guy that shows up to a team function and people say, man, have you seen Bart?
Yeah,
I want him to be mad. I want people to be mad at me. Like, I can't believe he's in better shape now than he was when he was playing. I hate him. I want people to hate me. I want them to say, damn, this dude is still disciplined. But it's about feeling good and enjoying life, not just living life. Not just existing. It's about flourishing. It's about continuing to push yourself and push your mind, push your body.
And you see how important that...
Just because you retire from your sport, don't mean you stop or cease to be an athlete. I'll always be an athlete. It'll always be part of my DNA. The only thing now is I'm my opponent. It's not another opponent per se. I'm my own opponent.
Absolutely. Now, Dwayne, what advice would you offer our listeners today? Especially, you know, we're getting in the colder weather now and we got to try to stay in shape and we want to start working out now. What recommendations would you recommend our listeners to get them started, especially if they've been on their couch for a while and stuff?
Well, I usually tell a lot of clients, especially like a client that haven't worked out in a long time, the first thing you need to do is start walking. Start with the most simplest thing, something that you do naturally every single day. Get out, walk. I mean, walk. You got stairs in your house, walking up and down the stairs. Start getting that cardio in there. Some people can afford gyms, some can't afford gyms. But one thing you can do, you can get outside and you can move around. You can move around, do simple things. If you can't do weights or whatever, find some of the most simple things you can do, like some sit-ups or crunches, push-ups on your knees. I hear a lot of women say, I can't do push-ups.
Right.
I got women that couldn't do one push-up. Now I got some of them that I've trained that lost over 100 pounds can do 50 push-ups and no problem. You have to start somewhere. Get off the couch. Get up. Move around. Grab me some water bottles. You don't have weights? Get some water bottles. Start doing some curls with your water bottles. Get outside, depending on where you're at. I know the different states that the show has been heard right now, and most of the states are very warm states, so you got to walk. You got to walk almost every day. Get outside 45 minutes a day. Pick up the pace. I'm not talking about walking with your best friend and gossiping about what's going on around the community. I'm talking about getting a nice, fast pace, 45 minutes to an hour a day, start there. And then once you're able to master that,
right,
then you can get a light jog. If you can't do that, then you go back into the gym. You try to find another gym. You got your different gyms right here where you can get involved with. And just start very lightweight training. But the first thing I always tell people, start walking. Get out there. If you got a treadmill, get on the treadmill. You have to get off that couch. And, just start there first.
And, Bart, what recommendation would you give professional college athletes why they should use Dwayne? What would be that intangible reason why they should contact him?
Because he's going to do one thing. He's going to make you comfortable with being uncomfortable. Listen, things are never ideal. You're always going to be, it's always something to brewing. We always think things or hope things are going to go as according to plan, but that's not the case. You got to get comfortable with being uncomfortable and get used to being able to adjust and call your own audible and be able to handle whatever it takes, whatever comes your way, be able to handle that, adjust to it. You know, it's those people that are the ones that are most successful. A lot of people can't handle adversity. You know, adversity doesn't develop character, it reveals it. You know, and Dwayne's gonna put you in an uncomfortable spot, and you're either gonna have to respond or you're not. You're gonna have to make a decision. Is this for me? But if you really want it, he's gonna push you to be the best version of yourself. And when you go against the other guy that doesn't have that, haven't had that type of training, you know, because it's not about training a body all the time, it's about training your mind.
Right.
You know, that's why Ali said that, you know, people asked him, how many sit-ups did he do? And he said, I don't know. I didn't start counting till it hurt. Because that's when it's most important. The mind controls the body. And if you're able to tap into that place and go to that place, you can't be defeated because you have to make decisions. And success and achieving goals is about the will that you have to succeed, the price that you're willing to pay to get your goal. And listen, busting your butt and training as hard as you can doesn't guarantee victory.
No.
Okay. Dwayne.
It doesn't guarantee it, but it gives you a chance.
All right. That most definitely. And Dwayne, where can we find information on you so we can learn more about you and all those different things? Where can we go?
You can locate me. Some people can contact me through Facebook, just Dwayne Riggins, or Twitter, Dwayne Riggins 1. And, you know, those are two ways that people can just contact me through Facebook. We're right now developing a website. I had to kind of like tear one down and developing another one. But just go to Dwayne Riggins, DEWAYNERIGGINS, Dwayne Riggins 1. And Dwayne Riggins on Facebook. And you can find me, you can message me through there, and I can get back in contact with you. I'm also at Short Hills, anybody in New Jersey or whatever, New York, New Jersey, I'm at Short Hills, Poe, P-O-E, Poe Yoga. I do a boxing program there in Short Hills. So that's a good way of really reaching out and finding me. I get a lot of messages through Facebook, and people message me and reach out and say, hey, you know, I heard about you, and I want you to work with my kid or work with me or whatever. So that's one sure way of really finding me right now.
All right, and Bart, we can follow you on
Twitter. And everybody out there listening, don't contact me until after football season's over because I'm working.
Well, I know you're very busy for sure, but we can follow you on Twitter, right, Bart? With all your stuff, where's the Twitter?
No, I'm just playing, man. Huh. I'm just playing, man. Yeah, I mean, you have to. I don't even know my Twitter account number. my agent runs that. If you Google me, you'll get all my social media stuff. And listen, I love kids. I love giving back. A big thing of what I'm doing now is these financial literacy programs, where I go across the country and speak to athletes about handling their finance, but also teach them how to achieve the goals. You know, how to achieve the impossible, which a lot of people feel that, you know, being a professional athlete is impossible, but nothing's impossible.
All right.
Well, Neil, I also tell you this, that me and Bart, we're also working with a lot of kids together, so I've been privileged to have him work with me. Like this summer, we worked with a lot of high school athletes, so he became partners through training. Him, he became a pretty cool partner with mine, so we're doing a lot of good activities together. But we're working with kids and trying to help kids not only develop athletically, but mentally, emotionally. We're working with a lot of kids. And Rashawn Gary, once again, is one of the examples
right.
of some of the kids that have been working with. So.
Well, guys, thanks for calling. And you guys are tremendous. Best of luck. You both have very busy schedules, so thanks for taking the time today.
Thank you very much, Dan.
All right, take care. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter, at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google Plus, and also on Periscope, at Total Tutor. And always excited to have celebrity Tommy Davidson on the line. Tommy, how are you, man? And things are just fantastic. Hawaii, traveling all over the world. You just got to be pumped, aren't you, with just all these cool places you're traveling
to. You're pretty current.
Yeah, absolutely, aren't
you're
you?
You're pretty current, and I can see.
Yeah, yeah, I've been watching. I ultimately, Tommy, have been watching the YouTube channel for the show, and like you know, just specific like different areas you've been traveling to and stuff like that. And it's awesome. It educates people so much. It really does.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, I've been on the edges of this earth, and I never thought it'd be so far out. You know. It's fun and all, but I'd never thought I'd be that far out. I was so far in places in Alaska. I was so far up on a glacier that I was just like, you know, if the helicopter ran out of gas, we'd be in trouble.
Oh, jeez. So at times
I'm serious.
Yeah, you're serious. So, wow. So were you like, oh, my gosh, it's an adventure for sure.
It's an adventure. I mean, so far out in different places of the world that you would not believe, like, you know, the Panama Canal is one thing, but the surrounding area headed towards the Panama Canal is just like, was something out of Indiana Jones, you know?
Yeah. You're able to see things, Tommy.
So just,
yeah. You're able to see things, Tommy, that just, you never imagined traveling all these places.
Never. It's you know, the families, you know, being there with the families, and I couldn't ask for better. And the good thing is you can actually see this show. You know, you can actually see all the stuff that we're doing. It's pretty incredible. It's pretty incredible. So we're on CW from 8 to 10 on Saturday. And I almost forget the purpose of us talking is to get people to watch the show, but actually people need to watch the show if they want to see something really, truly different.
And as I was checking different things that have been posted up on YouTube with the Vacation Creation CW's videos and like little portions of the show, what you're doing is it's a variety of things. First of all, you're traveling these places, but you're showing what would happen if you were taking a cruise. And then when you stop at these certain ports and what you're going to experience and learn from that process.
Right. It's very cruise-based, which is something I never really did a lot of, which I plan on doing a lot of in the future because the best way to travel. You know, imagine taking your hotel wherever you go. And then once you finish visiting where you are, you just get back on your hotel and go to the next place.
Exactly. You go to the next place, and there you go. And what's really fun about it is that it's a different role for you in a way with the co-hosting, because you can joke around at times, but also be serious and also educate people. And that's what I think that makes the show great is, again, offering people a chance of a lifetime, a vacation of a lifetime, and also learn and follow their dreams of that dream vacation and teach them about the area.
Yeah. And be able to work through the process of grieving or the process of self-actualization with these families and these people that go on these cruises as well. So it's almost like you got the best of all worlds. Get it? Ta-da, best of all worlds.
Yeah, I get the joke. I get the joke for sure. go ahead. What were we going to say, Tommy?
No, I'm listening.
Oh, you're listening. Okay. No, so again, we're with Tommy Davidson, co-host of Vacation Creation on the CW, 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. on Saturdays. And you really enjoy working with your co-host as well, right? This is a fun relationship, right?
Yeah, we got a lot to do. We are constantly changing clothes and changing locations and getting in the van or getting in the helicopter or getting in a private plane or getting on the bus or getting on the train, you know, just all kind of, we are just all over.
All over the place, traveling. And when you talked to, again, next episode involving Hawaii, that was an amazing experience, wasn't it?
Oh, it's not over. We're going from here to the Pacific Isle, the rest of the Pacific Islands, Tahiti, Bora Bora, Samoa, some places I haven't even been. And I'm looking forward to that.
And how crazy is the schedule, especially with, you know, filming and stuff like that? Are you getting, you're definitely getting a chance to relax, right, Tommy?
Yeah, I mean, I steal it, you know. You know, I steal the chance to relax, you know. But I work hard anyway, you know. I'm up at 4 o'clock in the morning here working with you guys. This is something that the minute I left, you know, Washington, D.C., my hometown, and decided to get into entertainment, you know, I am living the life of Indiana Jones.
And you're constantly reinventing yourself and continue to grow as an actor, as a host, as a brand. And that's fantastic, Tommy. And that's, a lot of people don't get that opportunity. After one opportunity, it never comes. And these opportunities keep coming your way.
Well, you said it well. This morning, I'm really glad to hear you say that. Thank you. That was very, I like that. Thanks. I needed to hear that. Because I'm like, where am I going? What am I doing? I'm in St. Petersburg, Russia. You know, everybody else is back home, you know, doing what they're doing. But I have my own trajectory. So, it's not a solo trip. It involves helping a lot of people. So that's a good thing.
It's a fantastic thing. And that's the thing. And you're able to show another side of Tommy. We from these other experiences you've had, guest hosting to other things, now saying, hey, look, I can do something serious and still throw some comedy involved in it and help others. So what a great thing.
Yeah. Wow. Thanks, man.
Absolutely, Tommy. So we could check you out again on the CW on Saturdays, Vacation Creation, 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. But also, where can we find information on you, Tommy? Check you out and all those other places as well. Where can we go?
Yes, please do. I'm out there. So check me out.
You're out there. Check you out and trying to stay on social media when you have a chance. But just enjoy this time, man. Enjoy it. And hopefully the show continues to have success and then you can continue to do this. And never know what those opportunities will bring for the next level. Tommy, one other question. What was your favorite role on In Living Color? What would you say was your favorite role playing in Living Color?
Oh, nice. I forgot all about In Living Color for a second. Yeah. Hey, a whole nother life, huh?
Yeah.
Probably when I did MC Hammer.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was so funny.
And yep. Seeing I was probably, because he was the hottest thing at the time. And for me to do that was like, I was like, me doing that sketch was like, the top of the, you couldn't go any